What is Shaking Machine or what is? What is? What is Shaking Machine or what is? Hey! What's Shaking Machine or the podcast that celebrates the passion and the madness of the geek, the nerd, and often the absurd. With your host, Shaken Shaner, and Psycho Bob the Cat. Welcome to another episode of What's Shaken with Shaner, the podcast that is often referred to as 20 pounds of stupid stuffed in a 10-pound sack. I am here with my producer, engineer, and co-host, Psycho Bob the Cat, and as always, I am your host, Shaken Shaner, and we are ready to jump into another rabbit hole of discovery. Hey, Nerd Herd, I hope you've been able to explore and embrace your geeky side and your nerdy self. It's important, I think, to spend some time on your guilty pleasures and help feed your passion and ultimately feed your soul. Stay true to you. Great news, we have another listener in Hungary, Budapest to be exact, and thank you for being a part of Shaken Shaner's Nerd Herd. Take off your coat, grab a seat, kick off your shoes, make yourself comfy, and stay a spell. We are ready to embark on a new quest based on Shaken Shaner's tantalizing turn of topics. We are diving into those topics that don't always come up in casual conversations with the norms. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. If you've listened to episode 26 on Icelandic sorcery or episode 27 on the Marine Dan Daly, you really get what we're going for here. If you have not listened to those episodes yet, hey, it's okay, relax, because I can help you with that. Head on over to our website, shakenshaner.com, where you can find all of our episodes and additional content. Remember, shakenshaner.com, and there is no G in shaken. Psycho Bob the Cat is writing our 10-minute episodes called Psycho Bob Says. You need to check out the most recent ones, episode 38 on what ancient cultures thought of the Northern Lights, and episode 39 on the book Craddock the Champion. Bob says that he's got more time to spend on all of the episodes. Why? Well, apparently he had a part-time job or a side hustle, if you will. And Bob, hey, sorry, man. I didn't know you had a part-time gig. It was crushing cans. Well, if it was a side hustle and didn't seem so strenuous, then why did you leave? Bob said he left because it was soda pressing. Oh, man, that's a big groan right there. Come on, Bob. Wow. Today's tantalizing turn of topic is new shit that I've learned. For example, recently, I have learned some of the following things. One, most employers will never truly embrace remote workers and demand everybody back in the office. Two, Psycho Bob likes Funyuns. I can't explain it. I could be sitting down here in my man cave. Bob's nowhere to be seen. The minute I open a bag of Funyuns, boom, he's all over me like stink on a pig. Three, cold nuclear fusion won't arrive in time to fix climate change, but it could be essential for our long-term future energy needs. And number four, people, this one is really important. I can't express how important it is. No matter how sincere you are, your spouse or significant other or your wife will not believe you when you try to convince them that honking their boobs is a newly accepted form of official greeting. I know, right? It sounds odd that she wouldn't believe me, but I got to tell you, I tried it with less than stellar results. Yeah, it didn't go over well, kind of like a fart in church. I don't get it. Apparently it was the honk honk boobies. Recently, I discovered The Great Courses. It is an online platform with lots of great topics, training, and university-level classes. You can find them at thegreatcourses.com, or how I found them, and that's on Audible, and many of their courses are included in your monthly Audible membership. I listened to the 24 lecture series in the course Ancient Civilizations of North America by Edwin Barnhart. He is the director of the Mayan Exploration Center and received his PhD in anthropology from the University of Texas at Austin. He has more than 25 years of experience as an archaeologist, explorer, instructor in North, Central, and South America. He teaches University of Texas travel courses for college professors on ancient Andean, Mesoamerican astronomy, and mathematics. So yeah, I guess you could say he knows his stuff. Nerd alert! Out of these lectures, the one that really stands out to me the most is the one he did on a place called Poverty Point in northeastern Louisiana. Many archaeologists and scientists consider it as North America's first city. It lies 15 miles west of the Mississippi River, and at 1500 BCE, before the Common Era, everywhere else in North America had small villages of roughly 100 residents. However, this is the important part. Poverty Point had approximately 4,000 to 5,000 residents. This was clearly unprecedented at that time period. Poverty Point was a planned community covering over 900 acres. It had a wide central plaza with earthen pyramids and six semicircular concentric platform mounds, which held hundreds of houses. Carbon dates from under the plaza come out to around 1800 BCE. The site's mounds and living spaces were put in shortly thereafter and improved on over time and were occupied until about 700 BCE. That means Poverty Point was a living center for over 1,000 years. Yeah, put that in context. The U.S. has only been a country for 247 years, and Poverty Point was a city four times longer. How monumental this place was. We are now going to jump into a little more detailed description of the site known as Poverty Point. I have included a link to the map of the site, and you can find it in the description of this episode, as well as on our website. The size, scale, and organization of Poverty Point were unseen before in North America. Viewed from above, the city would have resembled an amphitheater. The semicircular embankment radiated from a 37-acre central plaza. The main population of Poverty Point lived on top of the embankments in a very organized but yet densely clustered way. In the rest of North America, most people were still nomadic hunters and gatherers. Those that did live in villages built randomly arranged houses. Their villages had no more than 100 people, yet in Poverty Point, thousands of people were living in orderly rows of houses. The tops of Poverty Point's curved earthworks where the houses once stood were unfortunately all plowed over when the land was made into a plantation in the 19th century. Parts of the earthworks are barely visible today. That plantation is where the site gets its name of Poverty Point. Scholars may never know why so many people lived at Poverty Point, but one way to investigate that question is by looking at the public spaces, such as the plaza, the mounds, and other large features of the site. There are five mounds in the site's center, and two more at a distance north and south of the center itself, about a mile and a half north and a mile and a half south. Three of the five mounds are on the back of the curving earthworks, and two of them are in the center in the plaza. The two in the plaza, Mound C and D, are both just 3 to 6 feet tall with a footprint around the size of a modern mid-sized home. Mounds B, E, and A are much bigger. Excavations have detected they were made with baskets of dirt carried by large crews of people. Mound B even had some of the carrying baskets buried inside, broken, and just thrown in as trash. Of the three mounds, Mound B is the northernmost and the oldest. Its first phase occurred in about 1700 BCE, apparently before the housing platforms were constructed. It is 21 feet tall and 180 feet in diameter, and its function still remains unclear. Mound E, the southernmost of the three, was built about the same time as Mound B, but with a very different shape. It's rectangular, stretching 360 by 300 feet, and stands 13 feet tall. Like Mound B, researchers still don't know its function, but the two together reveal a very interesting fact. They were built along a perfect north-south line. When the massive Mound A was built between them 400 years later, it was placed along that same north-south line. That reveals two exciting facts about the people of Poverty Point. One, they were surveyors who planned and prepared where the building should go. Second, they were astronomers. Lacking a compass, pretty sure they didn't have one then, it's impossible to make a north-south line without observing the movements of the heavens. Now, the most impressive part about this site, to most people who see it for the first time, is Mound A, because it is very huge. It is the height of a seven-story building that is 710 feet by 640 feet. At its base, that covers more than 8 football fields. That's right, 8 football fields. That's freaking enormous, considering they had no modern technology or modern tools. It was built after the city met its maximum population of 4,000 to 5,000 people, and Mound A was built around roughly 1350 BCE. Recent studies of the filled dirt inside the mound show very little erosion by rain. Thus, it is suggested that it was built very quickly. Researchers are determining it was built in about 90 days. In total, it is 390,000 tons of dirt. 390,000 tons of dirt. Holy crap. Approximately one basket load of dirt is 50 pounds. This isn't my math. I'm a Marine. I'm not good at it. That equals to 15.5 million basket loads of dirt to create Mound A, in a time when they had no technologies or no tools. That means there must have been thousands of people providing the labor to build it. And it was built with layers of clay throughout to prevent erosion. If you doubt how well it was constructed, just remember, it's still there after 3,500 years. The Jackson Mound, which is 1.5 miles to the south of the Central Plaza, is on the same north-south line as the other mounds, and it was built at least 1,000 years earlier than the rest of Poverty Point, and it makes it almost as old as the Pyramids of Giza. That's right, in ancient North America, they have found places that are as almost as old, if not older, than the Egyptian pyramids. So that brings us to the next point. Who were the people of Poverty Point? There are no burials found at the site, which means the pyramids or the mounds they built were not for burial. It is estimated that either they cremated the bodies or the climate of the bayou quickly destroyed them, as they still to this day have not found any of the bodies of the people who occupied Poverty Point. They were hunters and gatherers like the rest of ancient North America at the time. I know, think about that. They had a city, 4,000 to 5,000 people, and they had no agriculture. The artifact record with millions of objects from Poverty Point showed that the people were eating mostly freshwater fish and reptiles. Plants were no doubt a large part of their diet as well, though little evidence has survived to prove it. However, charred nutshells did survive, so researchers know they were eating lots of pecans, acorns, and walnuts. Technologies that no doubt helped their food production were earth ovens and an associated artifact known as cooking balls. The curved earthworks that we talked about where the houses stood are full of these earth ovens. In essence, they were just simple pits dug into the ground. Raw food would be placed in the pit, covered with silty clay balls that had been preheated in a fire, and then buried with a top layer of dirt. This was like a slow roasting technique, kind of like an ancient smoker, if you will. Poverty Point's size and complexity really lean toward a vast trade network. The city sits on the confluence of six major waterways, but is far enough away from the Mississippi River itself to avoid flooding. Amazingly, many of the stone artifacts at the site of Poverty Point were not of local stone types. They were from very far away, and their concluding river transportation may have been how they were imported. For example, soapstone used for bowls came from Alabama and Georgia. Harder stone types like quartzite, granite, and hematite were coming from the Ozarks on the upper Mississippi River, and as even far away as the Great Lakes. That's right, they had copper, though in lower quantities than some of the other artifacts. The copper has been shown to originate from Lake Superior in the Great Lake Copper Mines, over 1,000 miles away, in 1500 BCE. Crazy. That means they were trading with everybody else to fulfill their needs, and again, they were not doing any agriculture, so trade had to be an important part of what they were doing. Poverty Point was neither alone nor the oldest mound site in the lower Mississippi River Valley. Along the lower Mississippi and its tributaries, there was a wider area of culture now called Poverty Point culture. There are discrete pockets of population density, and there they have earthen mounds and some definable plazas, but all of them have Poverty Point objects, including items such as the cooking balls and stone charms and pottery. West of Poverty Point was a cluster of people living in Mississippi's Yazoo Basin, which had an overall population even larger than that of the city and its immediate area. Despite that larger population, Poverty Point was the epicenter of this wider culture. Researchers can see that through the distribution of these Poverty Point objects, it was roughly a 25-mile radius around the city. A growing number of mound sites predate Poverty Point by 1,000 to even 2,000 years. I know. One such site is actually on the Louisiana State University campus in Baton Rouge. Two mounds, both at least 20 feet tall, were luckily untouched when the campus was established in the 1920s. In 1982, they were excavated, and their dates came back to be somewhere between 4,000 and 2,000 BCE. Another exciting location is a place called Watson Break, located not far from Poverty Point itself. The site's 11 mounds range from 3 to 25 feet tall, and they're arranged in an oval pattern. Similar to Poverty Point, ridges connect the mounds. Carbon 14 dates of Watson Break say that it started as early as 4,000 BCE, but it was abandoned by 2,800 BCE. Think about it, this mound culture is even older than Poverty Point and abandoned before Poverty Point even started. As a reminder, most archaeologists set the time of the Giza pyramids or the Great Pyramids in Egypt as being built around 4,400 BCE. That means these sites in ancient North America are just as old, if not older, than the Egyptian pyramids. I know. Wow. Why haven't we learned any of that anywhere else? Why aren't they teaching us these things in schools? Well, disclaimer, I haven't been in school a while, bit of an old guy. But still, that is mind-boggling that there are sites in North America as old as the Egyptian pyramids, but yet nobody's talking about them. While I was putting together this episode, I came across another amazing discovery in North America. Traditionally, researchers believe that humans arrived in North America around 6,000 to 13,000 years ago. Recently, however, evidence has accumulated supporting a much earlier date. In 2021, fossilized footprints from White Sands National Park in New Mexico were dated to between 20,000 and 23,000 years ago, providing key evidence of an earlier occupation in North America. Now, these findings have been very controversial, and there's been a lot of hubbub about this. However, recently, they have resolved those dates of 20,000 to 23,000 years ago, reconfirming that humans were present far south of the ice sheets during the last glacial maximum. This all can be found and confirmed in the magazine Science issue, October 5th, 2023. This is mind-blowing information. As the lecture I was referring to in this entire podcast is from Edwin Barnhart, and he makes it very clear at the beginning of this lecture series, humans did not come to North America until 13,000 to 16,000 years ago on the land bridge between Russia and Alaska. So here we are, continuing to learn new information about our history of North America. This is all fascinating as hell, and I can't wait to learn even more information. But I do have some questions, so here they are. One, when was North America actually populated and from where? Two, are there more sites in North America older than Poverty Point and the pyramids at Giza? And finally, will I ever convince my wife that honking her boobs is an accepted formal greeting? Honk, honk the boobies. Honk, honk the boobies. Hey, Nerd Herd. I really hope you enjoyed today's episode about the new shit I've learned, specifically about ancient civilizations in North America. I want to hear from you. What do you guys think about the Poverty Point location in northeastern Louisiana? Let us know, and you can email us at shaner@shakenshaner.com, and you can also find us now on Threads at @shakenshaner. We really want to thank all of you out there for checking out today's episode and spending some of your very precious time with Bob and I and What's Shaking with Shaner. Until the next time, when we again journey into the passion and the madness of the geek, the nerd, and often the absurd. Thanks, everyone.